Good morning. Welcome to Talk Louisiana. I'm Stephanie Regal, in today for Jim Engster. Matt Doyle is producing, and in the studio this morning, we have Jason DeQueer, tax policy expert. SALT is, I think, the acronym they use for someone who is a state and local tax policy expert, advises businesses, and also works with lawmakers to get policies passed that are favorable primarily to the business community and arguably for the state as a whole. So tell us about the session, Jason, from your perspective, and explain some of these tax packages that passed. Yeah. What does it mean?
Well, thank you, Stephanie. It's good to see you. It's good to see you in this format.
Right.
Normally, I'm used to seeing you in a different one, but good to see you. And look, it was a good session, I would say, to start off with. This was a fiscal session,
yes.
So it was a 60-day session, but a lot had to be crammed in because it's a shorter session. But the legislature decided to tackle tax reform. And you know, this has been talked about for decades. I've been working on trying to do tax reform for over a decade, both when I was with the state and now, as you mentioned, in the private sector. And, you know, the unique thing about it this time, Stephanie, was that normally it's the governor who's driving the agenda and the tax reform package. This time, legislative leadership decided, hey, we're going to take it by the reins. They had been working on it for over a couple of years. I remember traveling to D.C. with some of legislative leadership, going to the Tax Foundation, Council on State Taxation. So this was not something that they just threw together last minute. They had been working on this for a while, truly trying to understand the problems of our tax system and then moving a package forward, which some of the things did happen this session.
And some of the key ones, streamlining and simplifying the sales tax collection. That's a big one because that's what always landed us on the bottom of the competitive lists, right?
Yes, and that's one that's been very near and dear to me, but you got to credit the speaker. Speaker Shake Snyder was the one who decided, hey, I'm going to take the bull by the horns on centralizing sales tax. And that's rare for a speaker to get involved with something of this magnitude that impacts stakeholders across the board. As you may know, Louisiana ranks as one of the most complex systems in terms of sales tax collection. Generally, we're around 50 out of 50th. We may have moved up to 49th. But it's just that, you know, you've got both the state that collects and then you've got 60 parishes that also have collection authority. It really makes it difficult to navigate. And one of the things And one of the things we've talked about is with the online sales and remote sales, Louisiana needs to be able to collect those dollars. And the Supreme Court came out and says, if you don't have a system that's simple for these out-of-state retailers to collect and remit to Louisiana, you're not going to be eligible to collect those dollars. So that really puts some risk in terms of budget collections and those sorts of things. So this is something that really needed to get done.
217-877-217-5757. If you have a question for Jason DeQueer or in the Baton Rouge area, 297-5633. Now, some of the other components of this tax reform package is what, eliminating the federal deductibility and paying down individual and corporate franchise tax rate and also eliminating it for small businesses altogether, right?
Yeah, so they went in and saying, we want to touch each and every element. We talked about sales tax. They also wanted to make the income tax system more simple. They wanted to look at inventory tax and a couple other things, didn't get there. But in terms of the income tax package, we have way too many rates. We have some of the highest rates in the region in the country, and we're also tied to the federal system. So anytime Congress makes changes with regard to income tax, it impacts our budget here because we're married to that system. So the goal here was decouple us from the federal government in terms of the deductibility of federal income tax, but in exchange, lower the rates. And so we lowered all three rates in the individual income tax side of the equation. And then on corporate income tax, we went from 5 rates to 3 rates and also lowered the rates. And then, as you mentioned, begin to phase out franchise tax and completely eliminate it for small businesses.
So this was good for business, no question.
Well, I think it was good for business, but it's good for the state as a whole. I mean, it does make Louisiana more inviting, more economically competitive, easier to navigate. But it's also going to create budget stability. It's and with tax and tax administration, you need to understand that the easier it is to comply with the system, the faster you get the dollars in, and the easier it is for taxpayers to get those dollars to the state. So I think this was a win for the state. I think it was a win for business. And keep in mind, this didn't reduce or cut taxes. This was done in a revenue-neutral way. So it's not that businesses will be paying less taxes. It will make the system easier for them to comply with.
Now, none of this happens unless voters approve it this fall on the ballot. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, so we do have two constitutional amendments within the basically five-bill tax reform package. The two constitutional amendments that would be required to pass is, we talked about it, HB 199, which is the centralized or streamlined sales tax. That will go to the vote of the people. If that is enacted, then this commission will be put into the Constitution. Now, Stephanie, there are a lot of other steps that have to happen, even if the voters voted in. You still have to come and build the system and that sort of thing. And then Senate Bill 159 by Senator Brett Alon is the bill that removes the federal income tax deduction from the Constitution. So that was the other barrier to always trying to come up or pass these reforms. And if those two items pass, then we'll be well on our way to improving our sales tax system and our income tax system. But one thing to keep in mind is that all of the income tax package of bills, not the sales tax, are tied together. So if the governor were to veto one of them, they all fail. And so that's also important to note.
But is there any reason to think he's going to? I mean, where is he on this?
You know, the governor came out and said, look, if this is done in a revenue-neutral way, it simplifies the tax code, it makes things easier, moves Louisiana in the right direction, he could be supportive. He has not come out since the end of the session and made a statement that he is going to sign all these bills in. He did say he was going to take a look at it and make sure there weren't any unintended consequences. But I do believe, in terms of the, if you want to call it, swim lanes, guardrails that he put up, all of these bills fall within there. And during the process, the governor nor the administration really opposed any of the measures.
And could it be enacted without his signature? Or does it require signature because it's a constitutional amendment?
Yeah, so the constitutional amendments do not require his signature. But the bills reducing rates, so you had House Bill 292 by former Senator Reiser, reduces the rates. You also had House Bill 278 by Bishop that reduces the income tax rates. Those go to the governor's desk. The franchise tax goes to the governor's desk. It's just the bill that eliminates the federal income tax deduction that is the constitutional amendment. But again, if the governor were to veto any one of them, the way the legislature did it, they tied them together. It needs to be a package. It needs to be comprehensive. And if one of them was vetoed, the whole package would fail.
Now, critics of this package have said that it's billed as tax reform when really it makes rates more favorable for businesses and the rest of the state is still stuck with a regressive sales tax system.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, you're always going to have some naysayers out there, Stephanie, but I will tell you, when this was moving through the legislature, you had everybody from all sides of the equation saying this is what needs to happen. I mean, you had the budget project and Jan Moeller, who was comfortable with this package. You had people who were not necessarily associated with the business side of the table. And again, this was simplifying, making things revenue neutral. This was not a tax cut or a tax decrease for businesses. And you couldn't do that at this point in time for fear of risking or jeopardizing some of the ARP funds coming from the federal government.
Well, speaking of Jan Moeller, I think he's joining us on the line. Jan, good morning. You're on with Jason DeQueer.
Hi. Sorry, it's not Jan Moeller. It's Neva Butkus.
Oh, hey, Neva. Okay, also from Louisiana Budget Project. Good morning, Neva.
Good morning. I have a quick question. Hi, Jason. You mentioned that this is something that LBP was interested in and kind of on board with, but I wanted to go on the record and ask a quick question. Getting rid of the FIT deduction was a well needed and you know, very much overdue, and LBP was a huge proponent of that. But the Fed deduction cost Louisiana around $800 million a year, and most of that lost revenue to the state came from our state's wealthiest citizens. So, you know, my question was, if we really wanted to reduce taxes, why didn't we take that $800 million and swap it out for the temporary half penny that's going to be rolling off in 2025 and leave us with a fiscal cliff, and get ahead of that problem that's going to be coming down the line? Also considering sales taxes, you know, infinitely more regressive and impacts our low and moderate income citizens the most in Louisiana. They pay the biggest portion of their income in sales tax.
Neva, I want you to hang on because you raised some important questions, and we're going to come back with the answers right after this break. Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. I'm Stephanie Regal in for Jim Engster this morning, and signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan. And visiting with us this morning in the studio is Jason DeQueer talking about tax policy, and Neva Butkus of the Louisiana Budget Project was expressing her organization's concerns about some of these tax policies. Neva, did you have any more to your question for Jason?
Yes. One quick thing. May not be a statistic everyone is familiar with, but 51% of Louisianans, you know, have trouble making ends meet. And sales tax can be a huge part of that because so much of their budget does go to paying that tax. And Louisiana has the third highest in the nation. So, yeah, to reiterate my initial question, why was the focus on reducing income tax as opposed to reducing sales tax, which is so much higher in terms of state rankings in Louisiana and hits poor and moderate income households the most?
All right. Thank you, Neva. Jason, have at it.
Yeah, and look, there's a lot of parts there, so I'll try to break them down. And Neva, good to hear from you, and I really appreciate all the work that you and Jan put in advocating for your group. So let me just hit a couple of the highlights. First of all, Stephanie, we need to understand that there are certain things that are not subject to sales tax that would make the tax extremely regressive. One, food is not subject to state sales tax. Prescription drugs is not subject to state sales tax. And residential utilities. Those are the highest costing exemptions in the state. So when the sales tax rate may fluctuate, keep in mind those necessities are not subject to sales tax. Also, I think the Budget Project had a pretty good session. One of the things that she didn't mention was that Amy Freeman was able to pass a pink tax that was exempting more female products from sales tax. So that was pretty good. In addition to the income tax reforms, the Budget Project pushed for an earned income tax extension. And we do piggyback the feds in one of the highest percentages throughout the country. So, you know, when you start talking about how you're going to pay for things, we also have to figure out how we're going to pay for the removal of the exemption for women products. The earned income tax got extended. The other thing in terms of, and Neva was right, they came out and supported the elimination of the federal income tax deduction. Right now, Stephanie, federal government, the administration's talking about raising taxes. If you raise taxes, that means Louisianians would get more of a tax break because that federal income tax deduction would be greater. So we're removing the deduction right before it looks like the administration is going to raise taxes, which could have called a major budget hole to the state. And I will tell you, there were businesses who had to get on board with this because they were very concerned about losing their federal income tax deduction right before the administration were to raise taxes. But they were team player. They got on board. And that's going to be extra revenue that's going to be coming to the state because businesses won't be able to take that federal income tax deduction, that hopefully we can do some things like getting that sales tax rate back down to 4%. The other thing is the governor was just flat out against doing away with the 0.45% right now. So anything that would have hit his desk with regard to dropping that 0.45, because we had talked to him about other issues related to that, he did not want to see that expire until 2025 when it's set to expire.
Do you see us ever moving away, though, from this regressive sales tax that we do rely so heavily on?
Yeah, well, look, in terms of the state sales tax, we have one of the lowest sales tax rates in the country. It's when you add on that local sales tax rate to it, which averages about 5, 5.5, depending on which parish you're in, that gets us up to 9, 10%. What I think needs to be looked at, Stephanie, and I've talked about this, and even sometimes when I talk about this, makes the business community a little nervous, is we have to expand the base to more services. We're a service-based economy, and those things that we used to buy, you know, you go in the record store, bookstore, now these things are being transacted online. So we first needed to get our sales tax administration system in order, and then we need to make sure that we are capturing the type of economy that we live in.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace has a question for Jason. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, sir. You guys are crazy. I'm sorry. It's just so hard to even listen to you. I mean, you sound like a dead sale car salesman. A gas tax is what the state needs. And
Phil, I'm sorry. That is not the way we talk on this show. Jason.
It's okay.
But anyway, as you were saying.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we got to look at, as the tangible personal property base kind of erodes and our economy becomes more reliant upon transacting through the internet and through the cloud and those types of things, we have to capture that base that we once had. If not, then we're going to be stuck putting more pressure on that sales tax base, even increasing the rate because the base is declining, or we've got to expand the base. And that's what we really need to do. Anytime you talk tax policy, tax reform, which is what they were able to do this session, it's expanding the base and then lowering the rates.
Mm-hmm. But I think what Phil was probably getting to, the without getting personal about it, is, I mean, the policies that by and large plow their way through the legislature in the state are very favorable to business. And business controls the legislature. And I think, you know, the progressive and social justice community notched a few more wins this year than they did last year when they couldn't even get to the session physically because of the barriers there of the pandemic. But, I mean, you know, it is sort of a lopsided playing field by and large.
Yeah,
and
well,
that's
look,
hard to combat.
Yeah, and I mean, to say business controls the legislature, I don't know that I necessarily agree with that theory. Business has advocates there, just like you have criminal justice advocates. You just heard from NEVA. Obviously, the Budget Project is listening, and they have advocates. Again, I think what was accomplished this session, let's keep in mind, this was not a tax cut for business. This was a revenue-neutral package that would hope to generate more return for the state of Louisiana. Obviously, you know, businesses who employs people, one of the things that we need to do is make sure that as we are recovering in COVID, from COVID, you could look all across the country that people are enacting policies to not just get their economies up and going, but this is a time to rebrand and repitch their state such that you may have more and more businesses looking to locate or want to open their doors within their state. And Louisiana did not fare well prior to COVID in terms of our tax structure and ranking. And hopefully some of the reforms that are made here puts Louisiana in place so that we can all grow and prosper.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the other big wins the business community in particular has been excited about is this transportation infrastructure funding. It extends the sales tax on cars and trucks. That would dedicate this money specifically to a protected sub-transportation fund, sub-fund of the transportation fund, trust fund, to help us build a new bridge.
Yeah.
And Lake Charles and other major much-needed projects.
No, that's right. Look, this, I think, was a huge win. The one point of clarification that I want to make, because there is some confusion out there, this is not an extension of a sales tax. It's not a new sales tax. This is the current sales tax being dedicated to a construction subfund. And that's an important point to note because we hear some of the callers worrying about, hey, we're increasing or extending. This was not a tax increase. This was not increasing the rate. And the marriage between vehicles and paying for our roads, I think, is one of note. I think that makes a lot of sense. We could not raise an excise tax or a gas tax, as people like to call it. The governor was against doing that, saying it wasn't the time to do it. I think this was a very smart way to go about it. And basically what it's doing, it's not taking the whole 4.45% when you go and buy a vehicle. It's only taken in the first year, which would be fiscal year ending 24, and fiscal year ending 25, it'd be 30%, then 60%. And it's got protections built in such that if for some reason the state were to need those monies, then it can revert back to the state. But we all know, Stephanie, that our roads are in deplorable shape. Traffic is horrible. And this is something that will allow us to begin the discussion and start planning for rebuilding our infrastructure and putting people to work. We know the federal government is doing a similar stimulus program.
Well, Jason DeQuire, thank you so much for taking time to visit with us this morning. And stay tuned. We'll be back after this break with Clint Cointman, Ascension Parish President. Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing today, and I'm Stephanie Regal in for Jim Engster. Talk Louisiana comes from First support for Talk Louisiana comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan. And joining us for the second segment of the show this morning is Ascension Parish President Clint Cointman. Clint has some big things on his agenda for this week, with the parish council set to vote on a proposed moratorium for 12 months for new development in a parish that has been plagued lately by flooding problems. And Clint, good morning. Thanks for being here with us.
Good morning, Stephanie. How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you. So tell us a little bit about really what you're hoping to achieve with this. And 12 months it sounds like a long time to a lot of people that make a living doing development and building.
Yeah. So let's start out with why now. And you know, you mentioned that a lot of people have been dealing with flooding problems of late. Actually, they've been dealing with flooding problems for probably the last two decades. This is long overdue. This should have been done before now. It certainly should have been done right after 2016. What you're seeing today, and you're seeing it not only in Ascension Parish, you're seeing it in EBR, Iberville, all the parishes in the Amite River Basin, is that our rules and regulations as it pertains to development are not adequate enough to handle the type of storms and the weather patterns we're getting today. And that is causing a hardship, and it's causing safety concerns for our residents. It's causing property damage, and it's causing even more involvement from FEMA and trying to get flood help from them instead of taking a look at our regulations and what we're trying to achieve. So this has been an ongoing problem. I think you have a sense of urgency now. For me to say, you know, I got brand new subdivisions with in the May 17th, 18th storm that had 2 foot of standing water in their roads. Cars were couldn't pass. Residents couldn't get out of their homes. So you're looking at brand new subdivisions. What that tells you is our regulations are not where they need to be when we're dealing with drainage. And we have some several traffic concerns as well. So the time is now, and that's why we need to take a step back. Now, as far as the impact on development community, what we're looking at in Ascension is we have a 3-year backlog on lots. That's just in major subdivisions. That does not include individual ownership lots, so you can push that time frame further. So nobody's going out of business here. Nobody's going to be bankrupt. That 3-year backlog is plenty enough. This does not involve the municipalities. So building and construction will continue in those. So the impact really is not as severe as most think or that most people are portraying it to be.
So that's interesting that your proposed moratorium would not apply to the municipalities, like, say, the city of Prairieville, for instance?
Well, the city of Gonzales, of Sorrento, and city of Donsonville.
Gotcha.
That's our three municipalities.
Okay. Now, you're basically saying we need to take the pause button for 12 months. Were these regulations, they're not adequate just to address the level of growth we've had? Or, I mean, is it the kind of situation where it's a wink, wink, nod, nod, let developers do what they want? I mean, were they just not strong enough, not well thought out enough, or people just don't really follow them and they're not well enforced?
A little bit of all of those.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that we planned correctly for the 20 years of growth that we've had, this growth explosion that we've had in Ascension Parish, being one of the fastest growing parishes in the state. And I don't think that we put in the adequate regulations. You look at what other fast growing counties are doing across the country, and you look at their regulations, and you can see it's just completely different. They're being proactive, and we're taking a more of, let's fix the problem after it's developed. And that burden falls on the taxpayer, falls on our citizens, and that's what we got to correct.
Patrick in Inniswold has a question for you, President Clint Coitman. Patrick, good morning.
Hey, this is going to be great for Baton Rouge. You're going to stop development in Ascension Parish. But, yeah, basically, so the government, because the government won't fix the drainage problems, they're now going to steal property rights from property owners.
That's one way of looking at it. Patrick, Clint, you've probably heard that criticism. How would you counter that argument?
Yeah, we're not. They have a right to sell the property. They have a right to build on it. This does not stop construction permits. But what Patrick doesn't understand is that allowing developments to build as they are, they're causing flooding onto their adjoining property owners, the other residents. How about their rights? Is anybody looking out for them? And that's government's responsibility to ensure that these developments don't cause an adverse impact on other people as well. So there has to be a balance here. And so you can't just look at the developer and say, oh, you worry about my property right. Well, what are the rights of the people that were flooding? What are the rights of people that were taking away their quality of life? Where do they come into the picture? And that needs to be answered.
And of course, so many of these issues have been exacerbated by the nature and the more intense frequency of the types of storms we've had in this era of climate change. Clint, what was the impetus for this proposed moratorium? Did you start looking around the country? Were you hearing from people who were asking you to do this? Did it come from council people who said maybe we should look at a moratorium?
No, this came from taking a look at what other places are doing in the country, as well as what other parishes are doing in our state. You look at Tangipahoa, and you look at the regulations they have made because of the similar problem with drainage concerns. You got Iberville, who's going to vote on a moratorium tonight. You got East Baton Rouge councilmen that are talking about moratoriums because the Advocate just the other day that sinkholes are popping up all over Baton Rouge. Well, what is causing that? That's causing inadequate or improper installation through development. And so you need to take care of those things because you know who pays for it? The taxpayer, the citizen. And who's looking out for them?
Yeah, no question.
That's my job.
HB in Denham, you're on the line with Clint Coitman. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, ma'am. Sir, wouldn't we accomplish a lot more if we got the parish presidents from Livingston Parish, Ascension, Iberville, EBR, and anyone else concerned in the Amite River Basin to work cooperatively in the same manner that you're projecting to do now?
Well, that's a great question, HB. And there was a time when you couldn't even get those five parish presidents in the same room together. That was a few years back. Hopefully they're working a little more congenially now. But Clint, what do you think? How much regional discussion and cooperation has there been? And would even more of that help mitigate some of these issues?
It would. And I'm happy to say that I have a great relationship with all our neighboring parishes, working with Iberville, working with EBR, also working with Livingston. Look, that Highway 22 gapping project, that was worked out with Livingston's elected officials. That was Ascension and Livingston working together. Currently working with St. James, plan on having more regional meetings in the near future with parish presidents, with other elected officials in parish government. So that process is taking place right now. Is it promoted enough? Probably not. I wouldn't think, but there's a lot of meetings that are going on between the parishes to how we're going to take a regional approach to our drainage.
And, of course, at the state level, you know, there are billions that the state has received through HUD, and that's funded what we call, or what the governor has called, the Watershed Initiative, which looks at drainage from the type of regional perspective that HB was talking about. But I know getting these drainage projects agreed upon and funded and then bid out and put and then done takes a long, long time. One of the callers mentioned earlier, Clint, that maybe if more had been done sooner, y'all wouldn't have to steal people's property, as he termed it. Why haven't there been more drainage projects in Ascension Parish?
You know, we've actually had a lot of good progress in just since I've taken office. You look at Lower Ridge Levee Extension Project, Star Construction Stone. You got the Fish and Frog Bayou Locks. They're going to start construction as soon as this water goes down in the man shack. You look at other dredging projects that we have going on around New River that unfortunately got held up in court, but was hopefully going to start construction very soon. So we've had a lot of shredding projects. I think that parish government and what I'm going to try to correct is that we don't get out how much we're actually doing. And it's a lot of culvert replacement that you don't see on TV. They don't get the press coverage as, say, the gate valves that I'm putting in New River right now or the major drainage projects. But all of them matter, and all of them keep people from flooding during flash flooding and major floods. So, you know, we got to do a better job as elected officials showing what we are accomplishing rather than just complaining and bickering and doing some of the things that occur at some of our drainage meetings and council meetings.
Ike in Gonzales has a question for you. Ike, good morning. You're on with Clint Coitman.
Good morning, Mr. Coitman, my new parish president. I need to ask you this. Are you grateful that the legislators who represent Ascension Parish were smart enough to get this parish into the Louisiana coastal zone and the future funds that could come with it due to how the various management programs, some with federal catastrophe funding and lawsuit settlement, due to how that plays out? Are you glad we're into the coastal zone in Ascension Parish?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a tricky situation. Coastal zone requires a lot of different other regulations. Everything has a cost, right? So, yes, we may be available to get more funding through some coastal projects or coastal funding, but there comes with significant added regulations to those as well. So, that's something that we have to look at. I will tell you that our state representatives and senators, we have a great working relationship.
All right. Well, you stay right there, Clint, because we have more callers with more good questions like Ike's. We'll be back after this break. And welcome back to the last segment of Talk Louisiana. I'm Stephanie Regal in for Jim this morning. And, of course, signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan. And we're joined by Clint Coitman, Ascension Parish President, whose parish council will vote later this week on his proposed 12-month building moratorium on new development while the parish tries to get a handle on its flooding and drainage problems. Doug in Blue Bonnet, you've been patiently waiting for Clint Coitman. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad you all are talking about this. It's very timely. I missed the beginning, so you may have mentioned that in 2017, the late Councilman Buddy Amoroso in Baton Rouge tried to get a 6-month temporary moratorium on new projects, new ones, in high-risk flood zones, and the Baton Rouge Growth Coalition, which is a powerful group of realtors and developers, told the Metro Council they wouldn't let them do that, and it failed. They showed where the power lies in our parish. Had it been passed, though, we would have avoided probably a lot of the damage we've seen since then. So every parish that tries to do this, they're not doing it because they want to do it. They're doing it because they're in a very dire situation.
You raise a good point, Doug. Thanks for reminding us of that recent history. And of course, Chana Banks has proposed a discussion that will be coming up at the next East Baton Rouge Parish Council meeting. We'll see how far it gets, and I would suspect not very, but at least we'll be having the discussion. Clint, how are the politics over there in Ascension? And do you have a feel? Have you been counting noses on the council?
I think that's one of my greatest fears, is that we'll have certain councilmen, not all for sure, because a lot of people support this in a very positive fashion, but certain councilmen who will try to manipulate and create a situation that setting up the administration for failure in this regard. And that's unfortunate. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope I'm wrong, but actions will tell the truth, not words. And so I'm just hoping that those councilmen are considered putting their constituents first and politics last in this regard, because we really need this to help our residents. Look, we're not only trying to build quality homes here in Ascension, we're trying to build quality communities, and that involves a look at how we plan. And I can tell you, we actually got a good bit of support from the real estate community, because they know what that means when you build quality communities. Your property values go up, your housing values go up, and that creates a great market for them. And so there's a lot of positives that are going to come out of this if it's successful.
Okay, somebody has texted in wanting to know, so if you plan to limit new projects, will you increase density in non-flood zones to balance it out?
Actually, I want to go restrictive on density. So our three residential zonings is RM, which is 3 lots per acre, rural, which is 2 lots per acre, and then conservation, 1 acre per lot. I would like to see and have start the conversation of having RM, 2 lots per acre, rural going from a half acre to 3/4 acre, and possibly conservation going from 1 acre to 1.5 acres. Let's let our municipalities have the density and the increase in density. Let's try to keep some of our rural character here in Ascension. And that's the goal. We're going to do a listening tour with around the parish and go out and talk to our residents and see what they want. That's who we represent as elected officials. If we don't go talk to them, then we're failing at our job. So we have a great listening tour scheduled here over the next month to go around to different parts of our parish and get that feedback from our residents.
And that's assuming it passes, right?
I'm gonna do
or either way.
Yes.
Either way. All right.
Either way.
Stephen in Magnolia Woods is on the line. Good morning, Stephen. You're on with Clint Coitman.
Hi. Good morning. I have three quick points to make. Number one, the gentleman on the call, with you today on the show with you today, sounds like an adult. Thank you. Number two, have you ever spoken to Frank Bonifay, who used to run the Alligator Bayou Conservation Area, about what he knows about why the flooding occurs in that area? And then number three, yesterday I went to go try to take a photograph of what's happening over there at the Alligator Bayou road crossing where the pumps are and such. And an Ascension Parish deputy told me I couldn't come over there to take a picture. And I wanted to take a picture to give it to my council person, Jennifer Rocca, over here in EBR, to show her what's happening on the far end of this this waterway system that I think is causing flooding way up here, up on Highland Road.
All right, Stephen, thank you. All right, can you address those, President Quitman? Back there on Alligator Bayou, and then also why we can't take pictures of it.
Yes, my good friend, Mr. Bonifay, me and Frank get together quite often to discuss the Bluff Swamp and the Spanish Lake Basin. So we have a great working relationship. It's one of the reasons why you see the construction starting on Fish and Frog is because of my relationship with Frank, and I want to continue that great relationship. So the reason why you can't go take pictures is that's an active construction site, and we can't have sightseers. If any EBR elected officials would like, they please contact my office. I'd be happy to take them in and see what's going on. I'd be happy to do that. But that is an active construction site, and so obviously we can't have people sightseeing or taking pictures that are not certified to be in those construction site areas.
That is such a beautiful area, though, and it really does seem to sort of encapsulate, I think, the problem, the relationship, interconnected nature of these parishes. And, if you do one project in one parish, it's going to affect the other one downstream. And consequently, if you block it up or do a portable dam downstream, it's going to back up allegedly into East Baton Rouge Parish. And, of course, the floating dam issue has been in the courts recently. Do you think that this moratorium would help maybe address that issue in any sort of way? And what is your position on that, Clint?
Well, when you look at the circumstance, we're meeting with EBR drainage officials Wednesday to talk about Man Shack. So we're trying to take a regional approach with our neighbors. And so we're looking at how we can get the waters reduced in Man Shack, because that is key for all of that area, including EBR and those areas around the Country Club of Louisiana and those areas that have developed in that southern part of EBR. So we're looking at those solutions currently with EBR's drainage officials. So look, these are not something that you can just wave a magic wand and happens magically. They involve core permits, involve state permits, involve wildlife and fishery permits. And, you know, here in Ascension, and me especially, I want to stay on good ground with all of my agencies and who works very well with us. The Corps of Engineers has worked great with us through this emergency declaration. So we try to keep those relationships strong, and we try to keep open, make sure we're communicating and working with that. So these things take a lot of coordination, a lot of planning, but we got to take action. That's the key part to it. We can't just keep talking about it. We have to take action. And so we're looking forward to doing that with our neighboring parishes.
Mm-hmm. Now, the vote on the parish council is Thursday night. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And you know, you said you're concerned because there is some opposition and it could go either way. Do you foresee a potential compromise? Or, I mean, is there a plan B? Suppose they come back and say, well, you know, we can do it for 6 months. Would you be good with that?
No.
No.
You can't accomplish what needs to be accomplished in 6 months. You can't do it. You're talking about bringing professionals. You're talking about revising your unified land development code, your ordinances, everything. So where we kind of stress the timeline after we do the listening tour, after we bring in the professionals to start looking at the different ordinances and field ordinances and all the other ordinances, what you're looking at is submitting those to the council in probably month 7 and 8. And then negotiating that with them through those months, and then using months 9, 10, and 11 to adopt those ordinances and make those changes. And so it involves certain things going through the Planning Commission. Just to be honest, Stephanie, things in government work slow.
Yeah.
They just do. And it's very complicated, and there's a lot of moving parts, and you just simply can't get it done in 6 months.
Now, you have not been afraid to tackle really thorny, controversial issues before. You had not even been sworn into office yet when you bucked a proposal that would have shaken up the sewer system down there, a company mm-hmm. controlled by Jim Bernhard and his powerful private equity firm. And you really drove a hard bargain on that, and y'all ended up striking a deal, but it was only because you really held their feet to the fire and negotiated something that would be more favorable for the parish long term. You are not afraid to take on thorny issues.
No, I look at myself as a resident, and I ask myself, what do I want? And I want an elected official who's going to put me first and fight for me and fight for the best deal possible, and that's my job. And so, yeah, no, when it comes to residents, I'll take on anybody. I don't really care who it is. And I'm going to fight for our residents. I'm going to do what's necessary to improve our quality of life here and try to make Ascension Parish the best parish in the state.
Okay. Well, Clint Coitman, good luck tomorrow night with the Ascension Parish Council. Thursday night, rather, we will be closely watching the vote. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan. Thanks to Matt Doyle, who's been producing. I'm Stephanie Regal. Jim will be back tomorrow.